Now, let's meet one of the stars of this year's Jazz Festival, Maurice Hayes of the New Power Generation. You're very welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brendan.
And Maurice, you were Prince's longtime musical director and a friend, I know. And
yeah.
Tell me a bit about the NPG and tell us about tonight's gig at the Opera House.
Well, I mean, what's wonderful is it's great to be here in Cork, actually. And, you know, Prince was here some years ago. And, you know, we have one of the guys, Tony M., who was actually here when Prince was here back in the early 90s. And so we're going to be having some guys to come out and, you know, play this music that we've all played for so long and that we've loved for so long. And so it's going to be a very exciting show. We got a lot of songs I think everybody's going to appreciate. You know, Prince had such an incredible plethora of all of this music that he made. And so we've tried to curate the best of it that we could, you know, so
yeah.
That everybody could have a little something from it, you know.
And I'm sure then some of those kind of wild, crazy kind of funk jams that he used to go
through.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And these are all, you're all musicians who played with Prince.
Well, not all of us. Yeah. For instance, the singer never worked with Prince, but he's a fantastic singer. We found him on the internet.
Yeah.
And, he was actually playing with one of our bass players that was in the New Power Generation, and we saw him. And our manager sent me the video, and I said, wow, he's fantastic. And we had him, you know, we flew him in. And the minute he got on stage with us, we were like, yeah, this is the guy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's fantastic.
And he had to be exactly the right guy.
Yeah,
this,
you know, it's
he?
A funny thing because, you know, you can't replace Prince, man.
No.
I mean, it's like a very difficult thing to get anybody in that space, and it's impossible to replace him. But what he brings his own energy to the music, you know, to the songs, and that's what we were looking for, not an imitator or somebody like this, but somebody who could just interpret these songs in a way that connects with the audience and connected with us, actually, because, you know, this is somebody we played with a long time, but everybody else, Josh on bass, the drummer's actually from Great Britain. He's a fantastic guy. He actually studied our drummer, Michael Bland, for so many years. He sounds just like Michael. So, I mean, we got all of the elements to what it is that we need to connect this music.
Excellent. Now, with a name like Maurice Hayes, you won't know this, but people might imagine that you're a centre forward from Castle Island in Kerry or something. Maurice Hayes, brilliant. You're actually originally from Arkansas, as Micheál Amora-Hurtig would say, not a hurling stronghold. But how did you end up in Minneapolis and in the orbit of Prince and Paisley Park and all that?
You know, I'll give you the accented story, the short version, but I was playing with this band in Memphis, Tennessee, that Prince came in the 80s, and he came to Memphis, and he saw that they saw this band, and the Prince band members came down afterwards and said, you know, we see a lot of bands playing our music, and everybody butchers it, but you guys play it like we do. You know, you play our songs like we do. And so we forged a relationship with Brown Mark, who was Prince's bass player in the Revolution, from there, we came to Minnesota to do a demo with Mark, you know, to kind of get our own record deal. And we eventually got the lead singer and I got an audition into a group, Maserati, who was one of Brown's projects that Prince wrote a hit record for. And the rest is history. I started working at Paisley Park and I got an opportunity to play on one of the Graffiti Bridge tracks with The Time. Joined The Time and then eventually made the connection
with Prince.
And
you replaced Jimmy Jam in the time of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, of course,
exactly.
One of the great duos and producers of all time. And then you started playing in Prince's house band in Prince's nightclub.
At the nightclub.
Wild nights, I can imagine.
Oh, man, it was amazing. I mean, you know, it was like Shangri-La. You know, we hit this thing where it's like, man, they're going to pay us to like play at this fantastic club. It's Prince's club. It was exciting. You know, it was like everything was Prince in Minneapolis, of course, at this time. And so for us to get in there, then that just kind of parlayed into us opening with Carmen Electra, which we came here. I think we were in Dublin in 92.
This was when Prince played in Malahide Castle.
Right.
Do you remember that gig? Because I wasn't there. People still talk about it as being one of the greatest gigs they've ever seen.
It was incredible, man. And what's crazy about it is Prince had fired my whole band except for me.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we didn't actually play at that gig, but we came to the gig. You know, Prince had us, me and the other keyboard player and sax player. We came to the show And it was like, it was outside, and there was like 45,000 people or something. Like, it was crazy, man. And it was just like, I remember seeing some of the videos of like the Beatles and Michael Jackson, where people would just like faint and they were like throwing water on everybody.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. And Prince came out, and I was standing in the audience with everybody else, kind of like I had a pass that I could move around. And I remember standing out with everybody else and just watching the energy of the crowd. And it was incredible. And then Prince called me out and said, "Write Morris." And he did. And everybody was like, "He knows you. He knows you." And I was just like, "Yeah, well, you know." So it was an amazing. I'll never forget that gig. It was a kind of an upheaval for my band. And then what he did was he had his band, New Power Generation.
Yeah.
He said, "Morris, just show them all the music. And then we're going to, after this gig, we're going to start playing with you, but with the NPG. And
okay.
So that was crazy for me. I just, like, my whole band except for me and, you know, the other guy got sent home. And then he said, "Here's the NPG, teach them the music, and then we'll start back in London." And I was like, wow, this is, like, mind-blowing, man. So
yeah,
it was
so
crazy.
As a kid in Arkansas, if someone told you you're going to be in Prince's band someday.
Yeah, it was crazy because Maite and Carmen would always tell me, like, "Hey, Prince really likes you. He thinks you're funny. He's like, he thinks you're pretty dope on your keyboards and blah." And I'm like, get out of town. He's got the best people in the business. And
yeah.
I just didn't believe it. But then, sure enough, you know, I ran into him at his club, the Glam Slam, and he said, "Hey, grandson, you want a job? You need some work?" And I said, "Sure, I'll be by there to mow that yard for you first thing Monday."
And come here, working with him, I imagine, is it nonstop creativity, like whatever time of day or night he wants to do it, it gets done?
It really was, man. I had no idea the level of energy that Prince had and to not only to just write music, to play music. He liked to have fun. We played basketball. He liked to go to movies. He did, like, I just don't know when he slept. That was the only thing. It's just like the guy never slept. And so that means you did a lot, too. You know,
yeah.
We'd go 3 days at a time. I mean, to the point you're, like, just slap happy, you know. And it was just crazy. I just never seen anybody with that kind of tenacity when it came to his music and how he just worked all the time like that, you know. It was amazing.
Yeah. And the impression we'd have of him is that possibly mischievous, maybe even a bit tricky, like, but
yeah.
and kind of slightly mysterious.
No. Yeah, there's no question. I mean, he was a prankster and he liked to have fun. He liked to, you know, phone prank us and things like this. He was like a big kid in a lot of ways. And that was, to me, one of the things I missed the most. I think about Prince is the laughing and the running around. And, you know, I used to watch these films of the Beatles and just like how they just goof around and they'd run around. And it was a lot of that, man. It was just a lot of fun, you know.
And was there a kind of a vulnerability behind all that Prince front? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, man. It was funny because I learned throughout my career that Prince really, his band was his family. You know, he really kind of connected with band outside of music and everything. You know, it's like we just had this life that we just always were kind of around, and it's just like that was his thing. He just loved being around his band because everything was just music centric to him, and he was comfortable around us. He was comfortable around his people in his circle, whichever circle that was at the time.
Yeah. But that maybe Prince didn't have enough for himself outside of that.
Sure.
What are your most treasured memories of him, Morris?
The thing about Prince is that I figured out kind of halfway through my career there was like five of them. You know, five princes is what I call it. But the one I appreciate, it was the benevolence, how kind he was to people and the many things that he did that people didn't know about, you know, that he didn't want people to know about. You know, when he gave a lot of money to things and a lot of time to charities and different things that he appreciated and the people that he appreciated, man. He would, for those of us in the band, he'd figure out who lived where and he'd give like a $100,000 check to your school like that you went to. He'll just give a check to the school. And you got to walk in with this big check for your school like you did it. But, you know, like Prince did this, you know, and he would do this for our different schools when we go to play in our hometowns. And I think that was amazing, you know, that he would think about that. And I remember when I used to live in Chicago, and I remember we were going to Chicago, he called me and said, "Hey, I want you to find three charities that you like, and we're going to give them some money." And just like that.
Yeah,
man.
You see, that's not a side of him we hear about. So he obviously had a concern for communities. And
absolutely.
Like black communities, like where
absolutely.
He had come from.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah? And told me to pick them. He just said, you find three and that you like, and we're going to give them some money. And I thought that was incredible, man. He didn't have to do that, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's nice that he was conscientious enough to think about it and do that.
Yeah. Are we going to leave the other four off for today? We're not going to discuss the other four princes, are we?
Well, it's funny. This is the order that I saw him.
Okay.
Prince number one was the Purple Rain prince. That's the one. When I went to see Purple Rain, that's what I thought Prince was. It's like, I've never seen a movie. I remember seeing this movie, and I was like, I couldn't think of any movie that I've seen that everybody in the movie was who they were. It was like that they all, Morris Day was Morris Day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You look at the credits and say, Prince is the kid. He was the only one that was somebody else.
Yeah.
Everybody else was themselves. And I never saw that in a movie before. So I said, this is real life. This is real people, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it was incredible. And then Prince number two, when I got the rehearsal, I was like, oh, my God, this guy's hard. He's a tough.
He's
a monster. Yeah. You know, he's tough. Prince number three was the joking, the laughing, the fun prince. Prince number four was the sad prince. You know, he was the guy that if he's having a bad day, you're going to have a bad day. And number five was the benevolent prince. It was like to give you the shirt off of his back kind of guy.
Okay. That's not a bad bunch of princes.
yeah.
You were part of Prince's Super Bowl show in 2007,
yeah.
weren't you? Which is still, people would still
yeah.
watch it on YouTube
yeah.
and say that's one of the most incredible halftime
yeah.
shows ever. Tell
yeah.
us a bit about that.
It was incredible because, you know, the first thing I thought about was, you know, when we started deciding the set list, is that I was like, wow, you know, usually you got an artist that comes on, they play all of the, like their greatest hits. They just kind of go. Prince didn't want to really do that. He wanted to concentrate on the show and say, what's going to make it? So we played like Foo Fighters. We played, you know, some Creedence Clearwater. We did a lot of stuff that was like, that wasn't ours and that we wanted to just make a great show with it. Prince thought there's a lot of different folks at a Super Bowl, you know, there's, you know.
Mm.
That may not be Prince-centric, you know.
So it wasn't all about Prince's ego.
No.
Yeah.
And that's what was great about it. I mean, because we just wanted to make great music, and you know, and so playing the best and, you know, from Foo Fighters and all of the different stuff, man, we loved it, and the crowd loved it. You know, it just showed a very well-balanced show, and I think that's what he was more after. And when they presented us with the fact that, you know, it's probably going to rain real bad, and do you want to just, you know, on the Friday, we shot the whole thing beforehand. You know, they do that. They do a run through mm-hmm. just in case anything goes wrong. They can always pull the footage. And Prince was like, no, if it's raining, let it rain harder. We're going to play. And it was like crazy, you know. So that's, and I think that's what another thing that Purple Rain in the Rain, man, it's hard to beat that. Man.
Ah, yeah.
You can't
yeah.
beat that.
And listen, if a person had just worked with Prince and then keeping his music alive the way you do, you could probably die happy as a musician. You've worked with a lot of other great artists as well, Morris, haven't you?
Sure.
You've been very lucky.
Oh, yeah. I've been Maceo Parker, who is a legend with, you know, James Brown. I played with Maceo for 2-3 years in the middle of my Prince time. And then we'd
did
also...
Did you discuss who was a tougher bandmaster? Because James Brown was tough on his band as well.
You know what was
fines
funny?
And everything for mistakes.
It was funny, man, because... you know, Maceo would share a lot of James stories with me, and I saw how closely, you know, Prince kind of emulated James
yeah.
in a lot of ways, you know. And, you know, I think James was tougher in that, you know, just was a little more edge on him. Prince was a lot more fairer, I think. But I also saw a parallel between me and Maceo, just how we approach things, you know, because Prince, and you know, he was a severely... regimented cat. Everything was, he was about perfection. He wanted everything to be perfect as it could be, you know. So there was always that parallel, but I saw a lot of similarities though.
Yeah. So you didn't play in Ireland that time, Malahide. Have you played Ireland before?
Yes. I played Ireland with Mace. I think I did some other dates with Prince, but because I know we were here when we played with Bono and The Edge, which was one of the most amazing accounts that I had.
Tell me about that.
Oh my gosh, man! We were at Bono and Edge. They had there was a club here. And we went down, and it was one of the greatest, probably one of my greatest Prince moments, man, where
yeah.
as Bono was doing the cross, we were doing the song The Cross, and he didn't know it. And so Prince stood behind him and was telling him the words as he was singing it. And Bono
wow.
killed it, man. I walked away with an incredible respect for Bono, you know, considering that, you know, Bono was humbled. You know, he's like, man, Prince is one of his, guys. And for him to sing that song the way he did, with Prince standing behind him, feeding him the lyrics, Bono sang it like he owned it, you know what I mean? And I was like, wow, this was incredible. And so him and the Edge were fantastic guys, and came in there and killed it, man. It was just amazing.
That's gas. Everyone has a Bono story, even Morris Hayes. Okay, so Morris, tonight is the gig at the NPG in the Opera House, yeah? And I'm sure it'll be fantastic. Listen, it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
It was great to be here, man.
Thank you very much.
Email brendan@rte.ie.